This is not homework. This is just a prop. Take one and pass it up. Yes, I referred to homework because each of these chapters in the Essential Ernest Holmes has an affirmation at the end. And what I'm doing is I'm just putting it on a little postcard so you can stick it in your purse or hang it up in the bathroom mirror in the kitchen or something. If you're Connie, you're probably hanging it up in the kitchen. And it's a reminder of what we believe. Just a minute, David's going to read it. But this is in a nutshell, the what we believe that appeared in the first Science and Mind magazine in 1927. And it's for religious scientists. It's basically our equivalent of the Apostles' Creed for those of you who grew up in Protestant churches. So, David, if you could read this, I'd appreciate it.
I promise to do a better job on this one. I know it's on almost by heart. What we believe in the unity of all life, and that the highest God and the innermost God is one God. We believe that God is personal to all who feel this indwelling presence. We believe in the direct revelation of truth through the intuitive and spiritual nature of the individual, and that any person may become a revealer of truth who lives in close contact with the indwelling God. We believe that the universal spirit, which is God, operates through a universal mind, which is the law of God, and that we are surrounded by this creative mind, which receives the direct impress of our thought and acts upon it. We believe in the healing of the sick through the power of this mind. We believe in the control of conditions through the power of this mind. We believe in the eternal goodness, the eternal loving kindness, and the eternal givingness of life to all. We believe in our own soul, our own spirit, and our own destiny, for we understand that the life of all is God.
Thank you, David. David has probably read this aloud
a lot.
More than anybody else I know, because he has done it every week at Evensong,
yeah.
At least the Evensong services at the Celebration Center for Spiritual Living. I don't know if you still do that.
Not too much.
You don't do it in the services?
Sometimes. Do occasionally, but
yeah.
We rotate the
meetings. Okay. Well, in
every week for 7 years.
That's a lot of reading.
That's a lot of reading.
So, in the Essential Ernest Holmes, in the first chapter called "There Is One Life," there's an expanded version of what we believe, and it's well worth reading if you want to take the time to do that. It's I think it's important for us to be able to feel comfortable in talking about what it is that we believe, so that when people ask us, we aren't going, And for us, I think that that this is a religion of happiness and joy, and that our relationship with God is a very personal one, and it doesn't need an intermediary. I don't need to go, for instance, to confess my sins to another person. I can talk to God directly about the way I'm feeling about my life without an intercessor. And so our relationship with God basically can be limitless. It doesn't have to be restricted to a moment in the morning when we might say, "Thank you, God, for my life," or something, but it can be an ongoing dialogue or conversation. And I recently read The Practice of the Presence of God by Brother Lawrence, which was written about 300 years ago, which is about the dialogue between this wonderful monk and God. He worked in the kitchen. And he gives you a lot of ideas on how to have that kind of conversation at all times. And no matter what your belief system, it is probably one of the greatest classics of spiritual conversation that has ever been written. And so also as part of what we believe, there is no such thing as hell, that, and there's nobody out there who's going to punish us or judge us. Or as Kate used to say, this is the church of non-judgment. Thank you, Kate. And there, Holmes himself said that there's a difference between hell and damnation and a law of just retribution. And so if we're unhappy with our lives, as we know, it's because we're ignorant of our power and our ability to change those conditions by the changing of our mind. And so the law, as you know, continues to work. Hello. Whether it brings us misery or happiness, it's all up to us. Let's see. There's two chairs right here next to each other.
I will.
Do you want to say that book again?
The practice.
There is one line.
Of the presence of God.
The practice of the presence
of God.
Google Brother Lawrence and you'll find the
Lawrence.
Lawrence.
That's what I was saying. It's online. Even the Ernest Holmes is online.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff, yeah.
Some of the stuff. The practice
of the presence of God.
Okay.
He was a... Well, I've forgotten what order he was, a monk. But it's one of the most beautiful... No, he wasn't Francis. Nope. Starts with a C.
Oh, something like that.
You just said that was cute.
Yeah. It is something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Oh, exactly.
Yes. And you can get it online. It was it was written 300 years ago, so yeah. It's well within the public domain today.
Is it L-A-W and not L-A-U?
L-A-W.
L-A-W, yeah.
Yes. And also, Holmes says that in each religion that there is some element of truth. And just because somebody may be Catholic or they may be Baha'i, it's their way of worshiping God. And he says that this is his way, religious science, of worshiping God, and that there is no one true religion, there is no one way to true happiness, that we follow the path that we are led to follow. And he also says, and this is really important to remember at all times, that the universe is for us. It's always for us. It's always working on our behalf. And all we have to do is use it, to use the law, to use the tools that we have, and it turns around and becomes exactly what we'd like. And I'm going to talk more about Holmes, but I did want to close out what he said in What We Believe with just a little bit of reading. He says, "I believe in a religion of happiness and joy. There's too much depression and sorrow in the world. These things were never meant to be and have no real place in the world of reality. Religion should be like the morning sun sending forth its rays of light. It should be like the falling dew covering the land with fragrance and sweetness, like the cool of evening and the repose of night. It should be a spontaneous song of joy and not a funeral dirge. From the fullness of a joyous heart, the mouth should speak. I believe in the brotherhood of humanity, the parenthood of God, and a unity binding all together in one perfect whole. I believe the spirit is in the wind and wave and manifests its presence throughout all nature. But most completely, through our minds and in our hearts, it proclaims our livingness and its lovingness." And that was the conclusion of the section on What We Believe. And it's really, really beautiful writing. Ernest Holmes himself is who's a fascinating man. He was born on January 21st in 1887, and he was the youngest of nine boys, and he was born on a farm.
Wow.
Right. And that's the thing you have to say. When you look at Ernest Holmes' context in life and what he achieved, you go, wow. If you could imagine the youngest of nine boys, he may not have gotten much attention. I'm not sure. although his mother Anna was an important figure in his life and eventually moved with him to the West Coast. There probably weren't a lot of opportunities for education. I don't think there were mandatory age limits for staying in school. And he himself left school when he was 15. And all of the learning that he did was done on his own. Over life, he had a number of professions. He was a butcher's apprentice, a scoutmaster, a purchasing agent, and he was a self-taught lecturer. So in other words, he left the farm and he moved out. I think he moved to Boston after leaving home. And eventually he moved out to the West Coast with his brother Fenwick Holmes, who was a Congregationalist minister. For those of you who don't know, in New England there is an offshoot of the original Puritan faith called the Congregationalist Church, and it's now been taken under the wing of the United Church of Christ. But when you go to New England and you see those little churches, white churches with the spires, they're normally Congregationalist churches. And that's what Ernest started out as. So his brother Fenwick was highly educated. I know he had a master's degree. So he was the antithesis of Ernest, who was self-schooled. And the two of them were partners in many endeavors. And I don't know why, but I had originally thought that Fenwick Holmes was just a minister off by himself. But in truth, many of the things that Ernest Holmes did, his brother was there right with him. And he was one of the original religious scientists as well. The first book that Ernest Holmes published was called Creative Mind, and it was published in 1918 when he was 31 years old. So this is the end of the First World War. Here's a guy, didn't graduate high school, and he just spent hours and hours devouring literature. He could have been out drinking with the boys or doing other things, raising a family, but he was a single man at the time. And he just read and devoured the world's truths. He was an insatiable reader, and he had a real desire to know the truths, the great truths of the world. And so he did marry, ultimately, later on in life, a woman named Hazel Foster, who was, I think she was an opera singer. They had no children, and she predeceased him, but they were loving partners for one another. He ended up dying in 1960, and in his obituary, the Los Angeles Times said that he was one of America's leading churchmen philosophers, the active leader of a denomination of more than 100,000 members in 62 churches throughout the United States, whose writings have been followed by many famous religious thinkers and authors, including Dr. Norman Vincent Peale. Well, that was written in 1960, but here in the year 2010, you look at Ernest Holmes' influence, and it didn't stop with his death. It really didn't. Because there aren't too many places you can go now where you don't see evidence of the principles that he taught. He was primarily influenced by Ralph Waldo Emerson, Phineas Quimby, Thomas Troward, and the early Christian Science thinkers. And I think he was a co-student with the Fillmores, who were the creators of the Unity movement as well. So that and Unity and Divine Science all came about at around the same time, which was in the early part of the last century. One of his legacies was a structured form of prayer called treatment, and it's either 5 or 7 steps depending on your desire. And for those of us who just love treatment, it can have an endless number of steps. And as a person, he was a real extrovert. He loved parties, which is why I think it's appropriate that we're having our Christmas party in January today. And he loved to cook. Apparently, as a butcher's apprentice, he had, I guess he really liked meat, and he loved making meat stews. And so I brought a stew today, although it's vegetarian. And I wanted to give you more of an idea of Ernest the person. He loved to tell jokes and stories. And so I'm going to read you a couple of them. One is a joke. It's called A Cold Remedy. And it's about a boy and a girl in New England where sleigh riding is popular during the cold winters. Of course, this is few years ago. While riding one Sunday afternoon, bundled up in their blankets, the girl snuggled up to the boy and said, "Johnny, I'm cold." Johnny looked over her and said, "I'm cold too, Jane. Why not tuck in the blankets?" So Jane pulled the blankets closer, but pretty soon she moved even closer to Johnny and said, "My hands are still cold." He didn't pay much attention to her, and soon she nudged him with her elbow and she said, "And Johnny, did you hear me? My hands are cold, and besides, nobody loves me." This time he looked over at her and he said, "Jane, remember that God loves you, and you can always sit on your hands to keep them warm." That's one Ernie story. And here's one that's a little more serious. When he was attending an interdenominational function, Ernest was sitting next to a prelate of a large Los Angeles church who was a good friend of his. This man leaned over to Ernest and asked, "Holmes, why is it that so many of my parishioners are leaving my church to join the Religious Science Institute?" Ernest looked at him and said, smiling, "It's really simple. We practice what you people preach." It's called Ernest Holmes, the Man, and it's by a man named Reginald Armour, who was a lifelong friend. I don't think it's in print anymore, but it's got a lot of insights into Ernest Holmes, both his philosophy and a little bit of his life. They were next-door neighbors, and I believe that he helped to transcribe many of his lectures that appear in published form today. The Science of Mind textbook, which is kind of our gospel, was written in, the original one was published in 1926, and later on in the 30s was reissued, slightly edited. In the year 1927, there was a magazine that had its first issue, which was called the Science of Magazine, Science of Mind magazine that we read today. We probably have a few in the room right now. And it was originally called Uplift, and it was co-published with his brother Fenwick. He created the Institute of Religious Science and Philosophy that I referred to in that last story, and eventually some of the people asked him to start a church, which was not his idea. Ernest Holmes was not interested in creating a church, but ultimately he did. And he wanted an organization that was democratic, that treated everybody as equal, that was inclusive, and honored everybody's spiritual experience, no matter what their belief system. And I went through the back of the January Religious Science magazine just to kind of give you an idea. Of how large this movement has grown. And, oh, here it is. David, you took it. There are 171 spiritual living centers. I'm sorry to stumble. We changed the name over the past couple of years, and so they're centers for spiritual living. And there are 42 teaching chapters and 57 study groups. And so you'd look at this and you'd go, "Oh my God, that's a lot of churches." But what's really interesting is that when he died, there were only 62 churches. And I did the math on this, and of the 100, there are a total 270 religious science or spiritual living activities within the body of the United Centers for Spiritual Living. 36% of these are non-church groups. And so I say to myself, well, Ernest's vision has really taken fruit, because I think even 10 years ago, there weren't that many study groups. And I know that when we started this study group, I think we kind of felt like we were a little bit like the Lone Ranger. Today in the Washington, D.C. area, if you're interested in going to a religious science meeting or service, there are centers in Columbia, in Laurel, in Falls Church, and there are study groups and teaching chapters in D.C., Stafford, and, of course, this one. And so within the past 20 years, there's been a real blossoming of of this philosophy within the D.C. area.
Is it possible that we can get that information? Because I tell a lot of people about study group, but they live in Maryland and D.C., and it's just sort of inconvenient to come out here. And they are, you know, so I'm just interested to know where the study groups are. And probably I get more in the study group than I do the church services. I mean, I haven't been to the church service, but, you know, I'm saying traditional church service.
Well, thank you for asking. There are two good sources. One is the website for the United Centers for Spiritual Living, and they have a place right on the left-hand side of the screen that says Find a Community. And then if you go to the website for the International Centers for Spiritual Living, you will also find a locator for groups like this as well. So I looked both up online this morning, and we have been listed for a long time, but also the new group that started up in D.C. and the Tacoma, D.C. area is listed in there under the United Centers. And there's a new group that's forming on the Hill as well, should be having their first meeting maybe in February, if all goes well.
Is that Dennis?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's Amy Daniels, yes. And I believe Dennis is participating. Our administrative offices are located in Golden, Colorado. It used to be, which is right outside Denver, it used to be near L.A. And another organization that's not even part of the United Centers or the International Centers that's probably best known for religious science today is the Agape Center, which is in Culver City in California, right outside L.A., and their lead minister is Reverend Michael Beckwith. But when Ernest Holmes died, none of this existed other than the 60-odd churches. And so you think about how much has grown since he died, and how many years later? 50 years later. 50th anniversary of his death. Just think of the phenomenal growth. I tried to look up statistics on the numbers of people that are members, but the problem is, in a group like this, we don't even have membership. We have people that are on our phone list, and that might be as close to a membership list as we have, but you know, as you know, some of us are located somewhere else in the country or in the non-physical. And so, you know, if you ask Connie how many members we have, I think she'd be hard-pressed to answer that question. The other thing that he created was something called the Practitioners of Religious Science, and it takes maybe about 2 years of training to become a religious science practitioner, and our job is not...
Prerequisites for 2 years of training.
Thank you. Yes, it's not straight 2 years. It's essentially 4 years, and we have no special powers that anybody else doesn't have. But what we're licensed to do is to counsel, to lead groups like this. It gives us the rights to do certain things. We're licensed by the church. In the case of this particular group, our licenses are held by Reverend Hillary, who will be joining us sometime this spring. She travels in an RV around the country supporting groups like this and empowering practitioners. So, religious science was one of the first groups to ordain women, which, you know, sounds like not a big deal today, but back then it was a big deal to have a woman in a position leading a church. The emphasis is on the individual relationship to spirit, no matter where you go in a religious science organization. And our most famous elevator speech is, there's a power for good in the universe, greater than you are, and you can use it. And I believe that this was used on radio broadcasts that Ernest Holmes did, some of which have been recorded. The phenomenal growth in the human potential movement is in part fueled by the teachings of Ernest Holmes, and it's really hard to pick up a magazine or a newspaper and not find some evidence of new thought thinking, of the thought that, happiness is ours and your life goes better if you're happy, And for instance, in medical schools now they're teaching things like guided imagery, which would have been unheard of at the time of Holmes' death.
Science of Mind was even listed in a recent Time magazine article with the actual words Science of Mind.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So I wanted to give you an appreciation for some of the legacy of Ernest Holmes. I know that when I first came to a religious science church in 1993, after years of searching for what would feel comfortable for me, I felt like I'd gone home. And I'm seeing some nods that that's been true for other people, and it's probably because he's taken the great world's philosophies and distilled it into a single package. And he's created it in a way that's very systematic, it's understandable and repeatable and usable by all of us. And so my journey since then has been an exciting one. And I can't say that my life has, you know, been really easy, but just knowing that I have the power to change all the circumstances in my life through prayer or asking other people to pray has made all the difference in my life. And I wanted to close, it's about time for our break, with a sermon by the sea, the end of it. This is given at near the very end of Holmes' life and is a vision of the future that I believe is just starting to be well understood in the world and repeated. I think that there are a lot of things that he taught that are just starting to come to the surface now. And I want to close with, find 1,000 people who know that and to use it, and the world will no longer be famished. How important it is that each one of us, in his simple way, shall live from God to God, with God, in God, and to each other. That is why we are here, and we are taking back with us, I trust, a vision and an inspiration, something beyond a hope and a longing, that the living spirit shall through us walk anew into its own creation, and a new glory come with a new dawn. So it is.
So it is.
So it is.
Thank you, Kitty.